Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so we're still on our first day of full day anyway of practice and beginning to settle, hopefully, and just the bringing attention into the body. It's such an important foundation for our attention and to ground our practice and our meditation in, even if it's somewhat uncomfortable even. But still, it grounds our, it's a tangible base for attention and mindfulness. And that's important for gaining a continuity of attention. Inevitably, our attention, our mindfulness, you know, tends to be easily distracted, you know, kind of flits about here and there. And I think of the image that Ajahn Chah uses of when you just sort of begin to pour something out of a vessel, and it just starts to drip out. You get drip, drip, drip. You can feel that. You know, that's like our mindfulness kind of dribs and drabs, comes in dribs and drabs, and there isn't a continuous flow, continuous stream of awareness. But as we tip up the vessel that we're pouring from, then the water begins to flow out in a continuous stream. And that's similar to our awareness when we cultivate it and put attention onto it and develop it. And of course, it's not as quick and easy as just tipping a kettle up and seeing the water flow, because there's always, even in water pipes, it isn't as if it's always flowing smoothly. Ajahn Kurunamo and I are water pipes to our kutis, where there was a break in the line and it took days before the water would get under the shower and go. it wasn't a continuous flow. You know, and sometimes there's the discernible cause like that in terms of our mindfulness, why it's not so continuous. But sometimes it's actually hard to discern. You know, why is it that my mindfulness is kind of distracted, or where'd it go? What happened? And oftentimes it's really a waste of time to try to analyze absolutely everything. It's much better come back to the body, get anchored, whatever we pay attention to consistently, that becomes the inclination of the mind. So that when we incline the mind to its attention and awareness, then that will naturally begin to build up. Particularly in our meditation, bringing attention to the body, bringing attention to posture. Especially when you're sitting for a longer retreat like this, it's important to feel comfortable in your body and to learn how to relax the body. Relaxing with awareness and alertness, so that there's a a sense of the attention that we bring to the body and to the posture has a certain enlivening experience, kind of energized, just by bringing attention and getting a sense of balance and alertness. There's a kind of enlivening that takes place, as opposed to kind of it being enervating and kind of leaking energy out. So that bringing attention to the posture, and we all have to adjust. You know, in an ideal world, as meditators, we'd be able to sit down cross-legged in full lotus, back straight, and then just go into jhana. I mean, just if we're going to start listing our ideal world, then it may as well go for broke. But it's actually never been my experience. I've never been able to have that degree of comfort, a physical ease that I could sit in full lotus. Of course, and then you get older, and it gets highly unlikely that it's ever going to happen. I'm spending a lot less time even sitting cross-legged now because aches and pains, physical injuries coming back to haunt. Everybody has that. It's just the nature of having a human body. But learning how to adjust and use the physical body and your posture as a basis for establishing a sense of balance and alertness, so that as you're breathing in, breathing out, it's not constricted, it's not uncomfortable, because the breath is the most immediate and to my preference, I'd say the most useful meditation object. So that using the in and out breath, the sensation of the breath as it comes in and goes out, as a basis for attention and alertness. Again, with posture, then it's not trying to be so straight that you're rigid, like a soldier on a parade ground or something. But you want to be able to either hold your body up or support the body in a way that you can keep upright. And just that uprightness helps the mind to be kind of alert and present. There's a certain amount of energy that we have to apply physically. It doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be, a struggle. But there's that sense of, okay, there's an energetic quality to being present with the posture, and not sinking into the, even if one's sitting, not sinking into the posture, or letting the posture sink. That makes it easy for the mind to drift, sleepiness, drowsiness to start to cloud the mind. So that using the breath as a focal point for establishing attention, and taking an interest as to how to establish attention, because there's all sorts of instructions that you have to hold your attention at the tip of your nose, and it says, no, it's not that, it should be at your abdomen. But really the Buddha didn't specify at all all that he said was to bring attention, sort of like front and center, in the sense of bringing mindfulness to the fore, making mindfulness the most immediate, and attending to the sensation of the breath. And this is where experimenting is important, in the sense of when you first start to settle and the mind isn't quite calm yet, not so clear, then it's helpful to have a larger object, like something that's easier to pay attention to, so that paying attention to the whole sensation of the breath, feeling the body, its weight, its ease, its comfort, its tension, just feeling the body, and then feeling the breath from the tip of the nose as it comes into the body, passes the back of the throat, the chest, the abdomen rises, breath, there's an exhalation, the breath, the abdomen falls, there's a sensation within the body, the breath coming out through the tip of the nose. One can feel that in the whole trunk of the body. And just tuning into that rhythm. There's no need to be too narrow in one's focus until there's an increased degree of continuity of attention. Then as the, say, attention, mindfulness becomes stronger, then you want to, say, give the mind a little bit more work to do, in the sense of paying attention to something that's a bit more refined, a bit more subtle, either just taking one point, the sensation of the abdomen rising, abdomen falling, or the sensation as the breath comes in or goes out at the tip of the nose, or at any other point where it seems interesting, and just staying at a point and being alert and attentive right there. You know, you're using the breath as a focal point, but then also you're adjusting your attention according to what's going to help the mind to be present. Because if it's it's a bit too easy, then we start to drift off. If we make it too challenging for ourselves, we get too tight. We get tight. We're not able to stay with it, and we lose interest, and the mind drifts off. You want to be paying attention to that quality of balance. One of the phrases that Ajahn Chah used to use would be, in our practice, paying attention to a quality of, it's just right. The mindfulness is just right. The effort is just right. It's not too tight, not too forceful, not too loose, not too nebulous. It's just right. The reflection is not too obsessive, but it's not too laid back that you're not really contemplating or investigating. It's just right. So that quality of just right, it doesn't mean that that's actually consistent. You have to take an interest and to be curious as to what is this just right quality. Because if you're tired or you're not in particularly good health, then just right is going to be very different from when you're sort of well-rested, or you're in a really good mood. It's going to be a different just right. So that you have to be willing to pay attention to that quality of just right. So that as we pay attention to the breath, sometimes even the breath on its own, it's hard to sustain attention. And that's where, certainly in the northeast of Thailand, then one of the very common meditation techniques or tools that are used in conjunction with the breath. It's just a short mantra. It's using the word Buddho. It's the name of the Buddha. In breath, Buddha, out breath, Ho. It just helps to anchor the mind to the sensation of the breath coming in, the breath going out. It's just one word. It's not that difficult to forget, and to staying with that. It's not discursive, but it's enough to use the discursive quality of the mind, the thought process, to tie the mind to a sensation, and that's helpful for sustaining mindfulness, sustaining awareness. If the mind is really settled, really clear, one is really right there with the awareness, the quality of knowing, well, one doesn't need to be, say, reciting Bhutto. We might not even need to be taking that much interest in the breath. The mind's clear, it's bright. Turning the attention toward the quality of knowing itself. Quality of awareness. These are ways that we adjust and ways that we find that quality of just right. And it isn't as if there's a template or a kind of signs along the way that sort of light up as you're meditating and confirming, oh yes, you've reached just right. It doesn't work like that. You have to be interested for yourself. And so that using the breath, and of course there are indications in the sense of as awareness becomes more steady, there will be a real releasing physically. Physically you'll feel lighter, less tight. The posture will be quite naturally more comfortable. The mind will be alert and clear, spacious. Those are natural results when we get that balance of alertness, awareness, attention. It affects us both physically and mentally. And it all begins with just okay, posture, breath, paying attention to one in-breath, one out-breath. As we do that, you know, we're one of the things that we're really doing is taking it away from the personal, in the sense of it's not sort of me personally trying to get my mindfulness right so that I can make my mind peaceful. It's more like shedding so that we can experience things that are more like, well, in line with nature. And one of the ways of expressing it is when we take taking the Buddha as refuge. And the whole purpose of that is sort of like if one steps into out of the personal and into more of an archetypal, it's sort of like the Buddha seeing the Dhamma. And that's what we're actually able to witness, that quality of the Buddha seeing a Dhamma. Because when we say Buddha, it's not a historical Buddha, it's the one who knows, one who is awakened, experiencing the way things truly are. And that's all we're trying to do. Awaken to the way things truly are. And we can be doing that each in-breath, each out-breath. And it's the mundane aspects of paying attention to our body, observing and experiencing the in-breath, the out-breath. These are an opportunity to realize that quality of the Buddha seeing the Dhamma. awakening, being one who is awakened to the true nature of things. And we have that opportunity all the time. And, you know, part of it is reminding ourselves, okay, just be present and be in the present. Years and years ago, there was a phase that Ajahn Sumedho went through where every time he began a teaching, he would begin it with, the past is a memory, the future is unknown, now is the knowing. It's a really beautiful reminder, because we do tend to, you know, we rush off to the future with our hopes, expectations, projections, anticipations, and it's unknown. You know, what's it going to be like at the end of the retreat? It's unknown. Whatever future we can conceive for ourselves is extraordinarily uncertain. And whatever is past is a memory. And memories really aren't all that certain either. Sometimes they feel like it, but you know, our memories are incredibly selective. We'll pick and choose depending on whether we want to kind of torture ourselves or reminisce about something that we deemed pleasant. Yeah, the past is a memory, and we should obviously learn from everything, but they putting it in its context, and if we're looking for an opportunity for some kind of security, stability, now is the knowing. We can establish a consistency of this quality of knowing, knowing clearly, being present, and being with the present, learning to feel comfortable in the present. You know, so often that drifting of the mind to off to the past or future is a response to our own kind of discomfort with the present. So that looking at that, questioning that, learning to practice with it. And of course, again, that's where, rather than it just being conceptual kind of exercise, it's using the experience of the body, using the experience of the breath to help to tether one's awareness onto the present, and being with that quality of knowing. So that as we attend to this simple quality of the breath, as it comes in, as it goes out, it opens up a real vista of opportunities for us to have understanding and an opportunity for clarity and peace. You know, so often the mind, it goes out to sort of with, you know, sometimes it's hard to have patience with something seemingly mundane like one's posture and the breathing. But, you know, it's an important training ground for the skills that we need in order to deal with the, you know, the complexity of the human experience. So that having the anchor that we cultivate and develop skill and awareness gives a certain confidence and a foundation. One of the images that Ajahn Chah used was that for us as monks, we sew all of our robes, our requisites, so that learning how to use a sewing machine. And in those days in particular, it was with a treadle sewing machine. That would be before the days of electric sewing machines. So that Ajahn Chah would sort of say, you know, it's like when you learn how to sew, and you actually sit down with the sewing machine, and you know, don't put any cloth in yet, don't put any thread in yet, and you get used to how to get the treadle working, get the thing working, get moving the cloth around, learning how to just be comfortable with the machine. And you know, that's similar with our paying attention to the in-breath and out-breath. It's not the end goal that we're looking for, but it's the tool and the means by which we have to be comfortable with. So that learning to be comfortable with our posture, our breath, so that we can, once we're easeful with that ability to stay with the breath, stay with the posture, we've got an anchor then to engage with the investigation and a basis of clarity to see what the mind is doing. And inevitably, as we practice, and there's going to be some, you know, the mind gets a bit settled, then it wanders off. So that just having that familiarity with the foundation, that you can, that's where you return to, returning to that kind of home base. Breath coming in, breath going out, bringing a certain energizing quality to the process of attending mindfully to, it's a neutral sensation. And the breath it's a neutral sensation. It's something that, you know, we're doing all the time. So then we can, as we bring attention to that neutral sensation, we've got a baseline to see, is there agitation? Is there confusion? Is there attachment, longing? Is there aversion, ill will? And you can feel it in the body. You can feel it in the kind of the mind-body complex, and particularly when we're tuning to the rhythm of the breath and settling the breathing, relaxing the body, the mind starts to appear more clearly, or the one's observation of the moods of the mind begin to appear more clearly. So that learning how to adjust, adapt, sustain attention. And it takes interest, and it takes a certain element of getting, even though we, of course, we say, yeah, this is something that we do, but there can't be too much self-involvement in the process. If there's too much kind of sense of self and me within that, it always, it gets wonky real quick. And there really needs to be that image of the Buddha seeing the Dhamma, the one who knows, experiencing the way things truly are, that's a really useful image for allowing the sense of self to drop away, that sense of I, me, and mine that tends to, it just occupies all of our all of our waking moments, for the old Beatles fans, all through the day, I me mine. All through the night, it's this endless refrain of the I, me, and mine. Of course, that's the fundamental root of suffering, that refrain and its endless kind of nature. There's a very beautiful exchange that the Buddha has with a deva in the beginning of the Samyutta Nikaya. There's a whole section, Deva Samyutta, on exchanges that the Buddha has with these deities or devas. And oftentimes it comes in the form of verses where the deva comes to, has some kind of thought, realization, question for the Buddha, and then the Buddha either advises or corrects or affirms that perspective. And a deva comes to the Buddha. The verses, so it's kind of short and pithy. As if smitten by a sword, as if one's head were on fire, the bhikkhu wanders mindfully, should wander mindfully for the certainly relinquishing or letting go of all desire, which sounds kind of right, because certainly the Buddha said, Four Noble Truths, desire is cause of suffering. The cause of suffering is to be abandoned. But then the Buddha responds to the deva using the same verse, as if smitten by a sword, as if one's head were on fire, say the practitioner should wander mindfully for the ending of identity view. It's really important. Yes, desire is a cause of suffering. Yes, we get caught in, we shouldn't be encouraging that desire platform. But underneath all that is that identity, the sense of self, the sense of I, the sense of mine. And it's that simple, really, and it isn't as if one then has to run around annihilating it, which is just another identity view or another form of suffering. But it's sort of, how can I release? How can I relinquish? How can I be the Buddha seeing the Dhamma? How can I be the one who knows, realizing the way things truly are? And the way things truly are, it doesn't have much room for I, me, and mine, which is a great relief, actually. But it isn't an annihilation. It isn't a pushing away. This is, again, this quality of just right. Things are really just right when we don't keep obsessing from that position of self. So that mindfulness of breathing is not just fixing one's attention on one breath coming in and one breath going out and desperately hanging on to that. It's learning, using the breath, learning how to rely on that simple act of breathing, the simple act of awareness, in order to see clearly. And then, of course, the nature of seeing clearly is a radical relinquishing, putting down, letting go. And, the practice is, on the surface of it, it's extremely simple, but it has major implications and major fruit that can come from it. So that as we begin this retreat, don't rush too quickly to get past the foundations. Don't rush too quickly to get on to some other practice. Learn how to be comfortable with the breath. Learn how to be present with the act of attention, and then be present for what you can awaken to offer that for reflection.